Welcome to Life in Debt, your practical debt education program. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, an award-winning, listener-supported, open-source, grassroots, and partially solar-powered community radio station broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield. Please note that these presentations are provided as a public service for general information purposes only and are not intended to be legal opinions, legal advice, or complete discussions of any legal issues. Remember, every individual's factual situation is different, and you should seek independent legal advice from an attorney familiar with the laws of your state or locality regarding specific information. The name of this show is Life and Debt, and it is a weekly half-hour educational show looking at all types of issues related to debt as it influences your life. The show provides practical, general knowledge about what to look for regarding debt, what are traps and pitfalls, and what to do to be an educated debtor. Please get some notebook, paper, and pen so you can take notes during the show. First, we always look at some debt-related news and facts for the week. From the New York Times, Millions of Unemployed Face Years Without Jobs by Peter Goodman. Even as the American economy shows tentative signs of a rebound, the human toll of recession continues to mount, with millions of Americans remaining out of work, out of savings, and nearing the end of their unemployment benefits. Economists fear that the nascent recovery will leave more people behind than in past recessions, failing to create jobs in sufficient numbers to absorb the record-setting ranks of the long-term unemployed. Call them the new poor, people long accustomed to the comforts of middle-class life, who are now relying on public assistance for the first time in their lives, potentially for years to come. Yet the social safety net is already showing severe strains. Roughly 2.7 million jobless people will lose their unemployment check before the end of April unless Congress approves the Obama administration's proposal to extend the payments, according to the Labor Department. In Southern California, Jean Eisen has been without work since she lost her job selling beauty salon equipment more than 2 years ago. In the several months she has endured with neither a paycheck nor an unemployment check, she has relied on local food banks for her groceries. She has learned to live without the prescription medications she is supposed to take for high blood pressure and cholesterol. She has become effusively religious, an unexpected turn for this one-time stand-up comic with X-rated materials, finding in Christianity her only form of health insurance. "I pray for healing," says Miss Eisen, 57. "When you've got nothing, you got to go with what you know." Warm, outgoing, and prone to the positive, Miss Eisen has worked much of her life. Now she is one of 6.3 million Americans who have been unemployed for 6 months or longer, the largest number since the government began keeping track in 1948. That is more than double the toll in the next worst period in the early 1980s. Men have suffered the largest number of job losses in this recession, but Miss Eisen has the unfortunate distinction of being among a group, women from 45 to 64 years of age, whose long-term unemployment rate has grown rapidly. In 1983, after a deep recession, women in that range made up only 7% of those who had been out of work for 6 months or longer, according to the Labor Department. Last year, they made up 14%. Twice, Ms. Eisen exhausted her unemployment benefits before her check was restored by a federal extension. Last week, her check ran out again. She and her husband now settle their bills with only his $1,595 monthly disability check. The rent on their apartment is $1,380. "We're looking at the very real possibility of being homeless," she said. Every downturn pushes some people out of the middle class before the economy resumes expanding. Most recover. Many prosper. But some economists worry that this time could be different. An unusual constellation of forces, some embedded in the modern-day economy, others unique to this wrenching recession, might make it especially difficult for those out of work to find their way back to their middle-class lives. Labor experts say the economy needs 100,000 new jobs a month just to absorb entrants to the labor force. With more than 15 million people officially jobless, even a vigorous recovery is likely to leave an enormous number out of work for years. Some labor experts note that severe economic downturns are generally followed by powerful expansions, suggesting that aggressive hiring will soon resume. But doubts remain about whether such hiring can last long enough to absorb anywhere close to the millions of unemployed. Some labor experts say the basic functioning of the American economy has changed in ways that make jobs scarce, particularly for older, less educated people like Ms. Eisen, who has only a high school diploma. Large companies are increasingly owned by institutional investors who crave swift profits, a feat often achieved by cutting payroll. The declining influence of unions has made it easier for employers to shift work to part-time and temporary employees. Factory work and even white-collar jobs have moved in recent years to low-cost countries in Asia and Latin America. Automation has helped manufacturing cut 5.6 million jobs since 2000, the sort of jobs that once provided lower-skilled workers with middle-class paychecks. American business is about maximizing shareholder value, said Alan Sinai, chief global economist at the research firm Decision Economics. You basically don't want workers. You hire less, and you try to find capital equipment to replace them. During periods of American economic expansion in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, the number of private sector jobs increased about 3.5% a year, according to an analysis of Labor Department data by Lakshman Achutan, managing director of the Economic Cycle Research Institute, a research firm. During expansions in the 1980s and 90s, jobs grew just 2.4% annually. And during the last decade, job growth fell to 0.9% annually. The pace of job growth has been getting weaker in each expansion, Mr. Achutan said. There is no indication that this pattern is about to change. Before 1990, it took an average of 21 months for the economy to regain the jobs shed during a recession, according to an analysis of Labor Department data by the National Employment Law Project and the Economic Policy Institute, a labor-oriented research group in Washington. After the recessions in 1990 and in 2001, 31 and 46 months passed before employment returned to its previous peaks. The economy was growing, but companies remained conservative in their hiring. Some 34 million people were hired into new and existing private sector jobs in 2000 at the tail end of an expansion, according to the Labor Department data. A year later, in the midst of recession, hiring had fallen off to 31.6 million. And as late as 2003, with the economy again growing, hiring in the private sector continued to slip to 29.8 million. It was a jobless recovery. Business was picking up, but it simply did not translate into more work. This time, hiring may be especially subdued, labor economists say. Traditionally, three sectors have led the way out of recession: automobiles, home building, and banking. But auto companies have been shrinking because strapped households have less buying power. Home building is limited by fears about a glut of foreclosed properties. Banking is expanding, but this seems largely a function of government support that is being withdrawn. At the same time, the continued bite of the financial crisis has crimped the flow of money to small businesses and new ventures, which tend to be major sources of new jobs. All of which helps explain why Ms. Eisen, who has never before struggled to find work, feels a familiar pain each time she scans job listings on her computer. There are positions in healthcare, most requiring experience she lacks. Office jobs demand familiarity with software she has never used. Jobs at fast food restaurants are mostly secured by young people and immigrants. If, as Mr. Sinai expects, the economy again expands without adding many jobs, millions of people like Ms. Eisen will be dependent on an unemployment insurance already being severely tested.
The system was ill-prepared for the reality of long-term unemployment, said Maurice Emselin, a policy director for the National Employment Law Project. Now you add a severe recession, and you have created a crisis of historic proportions. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. In the second half of the show, we have been looking at the two-income trap, why middle-class parents are going broke, and essentially studying the breakthrough book that provides solutions to the biggest crisis families face today by Elizabeth Warren, who is a scholarly professor at Harvard, and her daughter Amelia Warren Tiagi. Please note that the thoughts, ideas, and examples used in these programs are directly from or based on the work, theories, and books of Professor Elizabeth Warren and her daughter Amelia Warren Tiagi, who are two of America's leading champions for debtors. I highly recommend their books, All Your Worth and The Two-Income Trap. You can also visit the archives at www.kruufm.com under the Life and Debt section and essentially listen to all of the shows which we have produced on the issues of debt. Last week, I started to look at what went wrong and help create the problems faced by American families today. Specifically, we were looking at the myth of the immoral debtor and discuss why people were filing bankruptcy and also the idea of fraud and abuse of the bankruptcy system. And based on the statistics, data, and studies of Professor Warren and Amelia, we were able to dismiss those as reasons why people were filing bankruptcy. That is really not much fraud or abuse, and not that people are playing some kind of game, being lazy, or trying to get over on the system. Therefore, they file bankruptcy. In sum, there are three big reasons why people are involved in bankruptcy: job loss, medical problems, divorce or separation. That's 87% of the basis for forcing people into bankruptcy. While other kinds of reasons, such as bad investment, being a crime victim, credit card overspending, being a victim of natural disasters, other explanations, and no explanations, made only 13%, according to Professor Warren's Consumer Bankruptcy Project. So back to the point, there's really nothing new or exotic about the problems faced by American families today. Jobs have come and jobs have gone, and couples have broken up. Illnesses and injuries have been facts of life since the beginning of mankind. But the two-income trap has compounded the ordinary risks of daily life. And just a quick reminder, the two-income trap is both mom and dad in families are working. So with mom in the workplace and the family's safety net basically forfeited, a short-term job loss or a medium-sized illness now poses a far greater menace to a family that has no reserves. It takes less to sink these families. As a result, today more of them go under. But the two-income family didn't just lose its safety net. By sending both adults into the labor force, these families actually increased the chances that they would need the safety net. In fact, they doubled the risk. With two adults in the workforce, the dual-income family has doubled the odds that someone could get laid off, downsized, or otherwise left without a paycheck. Mom or dad could suddenly lose a job. In short, two workers, two chances of a job loss. A generation ago, people were only using one income to structure its financial life. Nowadays, however, with two parents in the workforce, people are structuring their financial life based on both incomes. Moreover, if we look at the economy, particularly in the last 2 years, but certainly since the last period of time with one parent working, the chances that a worker will be laid off, downsized, or restructured out of a paycheck have increased substantially. One team of researchers calculated that the odds that a worker would suffer an involuntary job loss had increased by 28% since the 1970s up to the point of this most current recession, that is, before the current recession started. Since then, it has really gone bleak. Job insecurity has been hard on single-income families, but now with these much higher percentages that a breadwinner will lose his or her job, the numbers are doubly grim, as each spouse faces a higher likelihood of job layoff. Families are in a very traumatic posture. Professor Warren estimated that in a single year, approximately 6.3% of dual-income families, one out of every 16, will receive a pink slip. And again, this book was written just before this recession that we're currently experiencing. So we can know for sure that that number is greater. But even right before the recession, a family where both husband and wife were in the workforce had approximately 2.5 times more likely job loss than a single family of a generation ago. And remember, the ordinary middle class family has structured its financial life on both people working. That's also including the mortgage, car payments, food, insurance, and so forth. Basic bare necessities were computed on two incomes, not one. Job loss, unemployment, and layoffs are just one of the threats that the two-income family has to deal with. Illness, accident, or disability can have the same effect. Once again, the dual-income family has doubled its risks. Two workers, two chances for a heart attack, bad fall, or any other medical calamity that can leave a family without income. The challenge is that this is a statistical analysis, but it runs contrary to what most families do to assess the risk they face. With two incomes, most parents believe that they have built in some self-insurance against layoffs or medical problems, but they would be wrong. Two-income families are more likely to file for bankruptcy than their one-income counterparts. Moreover, dual-income families who have filed for bankruptcy are also more likely to cite job loss or injury as the reason for their financial collapse. Going back to Professor Warren's study, adding up the risks, in 2001, more than 1 million families filed for bankruptcy in the wake of job loss, business failure, disability, or other form of income interruption. And as a bankruptcy attorney, having my own clients and with communications on a listserv from bankruptcy attorneys across the country, it is even worse today than it was a decade ago. Professor Warren sums this up as a painful irony. The family sends both workers into the workforce in order to, as some researchers have claimed, buffer themselves against the terrible wrenches of a changing economy, have actually just made themselves more vulnerable to those very wrenches. Twice as likely, as a matter of fact. If you're just tuning in, this is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and this program is Life and Debt, your practical debt education program. I'm speaking from Crew LP 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Now, another thing to look at regarding the need to file bankruptcy is what about the other reasons? Family breakup, huge medical bills. At first glance, those kinds of problems don't appear to have anything to do with the two-income trap. But those risks went up too, which proved to be very, very bad timing in the middle-class family that had let go of its safety net. Consider medical bills alone. There's been a huge battle going on in the government right now about medical insurance. From a more neutral perspective, we can just look at the data. The ranks of the uninsured are swelling, and the problem has seeped into the middle class. Going back to the beginning of the decade, in 2001, 1.4 million Americans lost their health insurance. of the newly uninsured back then, 800,000 earned more than $75,000 a year. At that point, experts calculated that an individual was 49% more likely to be without health insurance than a generation ago. Just reading the articles on healthcare, or even from our own experience, this situation is getting worse. More and more people just can't afford health insurance, and the number of unemployed persons has skyrocketed, which again means less health insurance for most of those people. In addition, medical costs are constantly escalating, and a growing number of families are filing for bankruptcy in the wake of a catastrophic medical bill. Professor Warren found that over the 20-year period up to her writing The Two-Income Trap, the number of families declaring bankruptcy in the wake of a serious illness had multiplied more than 20-fold, or 2,000%. Now, these are the kind of facts and figures that get clouded by the emotional political rhetoric and battles that are going on. The middle class is being pummeled, and they can't afford to tend to their wounds. No insurance or not enough insurance. We also can look at the demographics, which pinch the family, as the number of Americans aged 85 and older, who are those most likely to need daily assistance, grew at a rate more than 6 times faster than that of the under 65 population. The problem was also compounded by a declining birth rate and a higher divorce rate. Today's elderly have fewer children to share the burden, and more are alone after a divorce. So as a result, families with minor children are now almost twice as likely to be providing assistance to elderly parents than receiving it. And another thing is that hospitals and insurance companies, according to Professor Warren, conspire to cut costs by dismissing patients quicker and sicker. 1 in 3 individuals required at-home care after being discharged from the hospital. That means that more than 12 million families must step into the situation and take care of a sick relative every year. If all the adults in the family are already committed to the workplace, well, that's just too bad. Once again, Professor Warren's bankruptcy statistics confirm the story. Dual earner couples are nearly twice as likely as single breadwinner families to file for bankruptcy because of lost work as a result of an illness in the family. And then there's another calamity, divorce. This is going to be worse for the two-income families. Today, everyone knows that newlyweds face a high chance of splitting up, somewhere in the neighborhood of 50-50. And the two-income trap has actually wormed its way into the sanctity of a marriage. On the one hand, many commentators have held out the hope that the divorce explosion will prove temporary and the marriage may actually become more stable as the sexes stride toward equality. She works, he works, offering some kind of optimism. The idea is that there will be more closeness in the families, not less. Divorces may decline as marriages become, once again, economic partnerships, more like the ones they were before the Industrial Revolution. Fewer people will be able to waltz easily out of a marriage, as they might have been in the days when a thriving economy made good jobs easy to come by. And this may sound good, but it's a theory, and the actual data shows otherwise. During the 1970s, a single earner couple had about the same chances of splitting up as a dual income couple. By the 1990s, however, a working wife was 40% more likely to divorce than her stay-at-home counterpart. No one really knows why the difference has emerged, although sociologists have offered a number of competing theories. Perhaps the combination of working and bringing up the kids makes for a more stressful home life and leaves the two earner couple with less time for each other. Or it may be that today's stay-at-home wives embrace more traditional gender roles, which can make for a smoother relationship. Now, feminist scholars offer their own explanation, arguing that working wives see themselves as less dependent on their husbands for financial support and are freer to leave a bad relationship. But whatever the reason, the fact remains, and it's grim. The modern two-income family faces a greater likelihood of divorce than the one-income family from a generation ago. And according to Professor Warren, there is yet another wrinkle to the family breakup statistics that often escapes attention: the couples who never marry. A quick glance at the census figures tells the story. Over the past 25 years, the number of children whose mothers have never married increased by more than 400%. Many of these women are not really single,
which the
checkbox on the census form might imply, as they never married. Instead, they live for many years with a male partner. Since the 1970s, the number of unmarried couples rearing children has increased eightfold. Today, cohabitating men and women represent more than 6% of all couples raising children, compared with less than 1% a generation ago. Although 6% may sound like a modest proportion, the odds that a child will live with a cohabitating parent add up over time. According to one estimate, approximately 4 in 10 children will spend some time in a cohabiting family before they turn 16. What does this have to do with the rising divorce rate? Cohabiting relationships share many of the financial characteristics of marriage, since there are two adults to share the expenses and responsibilities of running a single household. When the cohabiting couple breaks up, the consequences are much like those when a married couple divorces. Someone has to find separate housing, and any joint obligations, such as a lease or a mortgage they both signed, must be resolved. If both partners are the children's biological parents, custody decisions must be settled, and the arrangements for visitation and child support must be worked out. But here's the twist. The logical consequences of splitting up may be the same, but the odds of breaking up are not. Cohabiting couples with children are more than twice as likely to split up as their married counterparts. Once again, the frailty of families with children comes to the fore. As these unmarried parents go their separate ways, the number of families left without a second adult to share the burden continues to multiply. So let's just briefly add it up. The list of ills, job loss, family breakup, medical problems is brutal, but it may also appear a bit eclectic and disjointed. After all, the divorce rate has nothing to do with health insurance coverage, and corporate restructuring has no effect on the number of elderly folks who need help from their families. When a family disaster makes the evening news, only one problem is in the spotlight at any given time. There may be a column about the terrible problems of the uninsured, or a story on divorce trends. Academics and other experts tend to use this approach. They focus on one highly concentrated area of expertise, and they usually write articles and hold talk shows about one specific category of calamity. But the bottom line is, families don't experience risks in neatly segmented boxes. This is, of course, what most of us experience, and we will continue to discuss it next week. This is bankruptcy attorney Robert Liptak, and you have been listening to Life and Debt, your debt education program. If you have any questions or comments, call the station at 641-209-1083, or you can email me at lifeanddebt@gmail.com. I'm speaking from Crew LP, 100.1 FM, the voice of Fairfield, Iowa. May you enjoy and have a healthy and prosperous debt manageable life.